Welcome to How I Raised It, the podcast that goes behind the scenes with entrepreneurs who've raised capital. We uncover the tips, tricks, and techniques they use to get investors to write a check. Strap in and turn it up.
Hi, welcome to another episode of How I Raised It, produced by Foundersuite.com. Today I have Amit Sankaran of Religion of Sports coming to us from Dallas. How's your day going?
Good, good. How are you?
I'm good. Is Dallas your hometown? Are you a native Dallas person?
I'm not a native Dallasite. But I've been here for about 15 years. I grew up in Houston, went to Texas and Austin, then bounced around, lived in New York and Mumbai, and then I've been back here with the kids. And our offices are in Santa Monica, and I've built out an audio team in New York, so I'm usually on a plane if it's not COVID time.
Interesting. And maybe this is too personal, we can always skip it, but why are you not in Santa Monica? Santa Monica is a beautiful place to live in, and Dallas is great too. Not dissing Dallas, but
It is. No, it's a good question. I mean, we've Gotham, my business partner, you're one of the co-founders of Religion of Sports, and I have talked about it for years as we started this thing about 3 years ago. And there were multiple times when, you know, we were about to pull the trigger on a move. But, you know, as we started expanding, both from a capital raise perspective, adding board members, and then team, more pressing team, and a lot of the team started, you know, accumulating where talent was, which happened to be on the East Coast, it just made, you know, less sense over time. So, no, it just ended up being between travel and now Zoom world accommodating.
That's true. I guess. That's a good argument. You're one, not equidistant, but you're pretty accessible to both coasts, and you know, kind of being in the middle of the country, so to speak. Well, very cool. Let's jump right into it. So, what is Religion of Sports? Intriguing name. What do you guys do?
Yeah, Religion of Sports is a media company. We create content, and most of our content is kind of answers the tagline "Why Sports Matter." So it's human emotional storytelling. We always say it's story, and it just happens to be set in the backdrop of sports. So we're not about, you know, box scores, although a lot of us on the team are massive sports fans. I'm a huge Longhorns fan, Astros fan, which I know is a bad word to say nowadays, and Gotham's from Boston. Tom Brady and Michael Strahan are two of our co-founders and are very intimately involved in the business on the board. Of course, have their own allegiance and perspective, but our storytelling is about, you know, passion, human emotion, stories. We try to think of anything we do, we try to take away, what can you take away and apply to life? And that doesn't mean how do you throw a football better, but how does Tom Brady and his perseverance help you as a father, as a CEO, as a husband, whatever it is.
Interesting. Yeah. Human experience part. So give us again some examples of it's long form and short. I mean, it's kind of a mix of media and duration. Maybe give us a few titles that are your favorite segments you've done.
Yeah. So look, we started with a show called Religion of Sports, actually, on AT&T's Audience Network, which is, you know, a subset of DirecTV. And that was kind of 6 hours, global exploration. And it was usually stories you hadn't really heard of. The Celtic Ranger rivalry in Scotland and how that paralleled Catholicism and Protestants, or how there was a Syrian refugee team in Germany that made up that entire team, and how the community stood behind them, and how that was a backdrop for, you know, basically society there. But some of our higher profile stuff was Tom versus Time, which was on Facebook Watch, which was Tom turning 40 and his exploration against that. And again, we intentionally broke those up into the physical game, the mental game, the spiritual game. So while you saw him in his season, what you actually took away was, how did he approach physical? How did he approach spirituality? How did he approach emotional? We worked with Stephen Curry for Stephen versus the Game, which was the second series on Facebook Watch for a year. We worked with a series of athletes on something called Greatness Code on Apple Plus, which was kind of us working with LeBron or Usain Bolt, Tom Brady, Katie Ledecky, Alex Morgan, around a 7-minute short for each one, which was just, what was their greatest game and why? And then Gotham asked 20 other sub questions. And then we hired a great graphics team, and we tried to visualize kind of flow state and what was their visceral sense of each of those moments and why was it impactful? And again, going back to our essence of our business, greatness, human potential, there was what we want to unearth and bring to life, and Sean White in his episode at the end talks a lot about, you know, how if he didn't learn from those failures and it propel him to success, he feels like he wouldn't have gotten comfortable taking risks the way he did, and how that also extends to now endeavors outside of athletics. So that's a lot of what we try to work on through our content.
And is it all consumed on the site? Is it a subscription model? What's the business
model? No, the business model is really what we thought long and hard about is, you know, 2017, as we started, you know, what is the world ready for, and what are we able to deliver? And, you know, our skill set, Gotham skill set, is creating great content. And so we started as a TV show and then started expanding really as a production business. Religion of Sports presents on Facebook Watch or on Showtime or on, so our customers are those networks, Showtime, HBO, Amazon, Netflix, others. And that's the business model today. We raised a little bit of capital in 18 and then more early this year to start broadening that and to, you know, really two objectives. One is to build a brand. We have a brand now with networks. So networks know who we are and athletes know who we are. And we've kind of got that flywheel moving. More and more athletes come to us asking to work with us. Similarly, networks sometimes, you know, can now come to us and say, hey, we want you all did this. Kobe Bryant's muse, whatever it is, we want you to work with this athlete or on this project. So that's great. But we want to build a brand more directly with our consumers. And so that's part of why we raise the capital. And the second reason is for, you know, we think about content like intellectual property, like IP. And so how can we develop more and more of that so that we can monetize it different ways? And so whether that's audio content turning into unscripted video or to scripted video, or in a way vice versa, we think about that as what we're doing with it. And so that's the business model longer term, is, you know, starting in a production model but evolving it to a Pixar or Viacom type model over time.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess how do you break off being a production house and then you basically become a competitor to perhaps, you know, some of these distribution sites that you're currently partnered with?
Not necessarily a competitor. It's the way we think about it is, you know, you could think about it, maybe the easiest way to describe it the other way is, I don't know if you're familiar with The Ringer or Barstool, sure. Which are two different examples. Ringer's Bill Simmons' company that started as an audio unit. Barstool started, you know, Dave Portnoy started as an independent, you know, audio writer, and then had a podcast, and then both of them built out engagement with the audience. The Ringer is an interesting example. So Bill built his podcast. He brought in others quickly to have their own podcast, but at the same time sold a show to HBO, right, and had a series on HBO where he was developing content with a particular platform, and it worked two ways for him. One is it amplified his own brand and The Ringer's brand through another medium, and second, for HBO, develop great content on that platform that they wanted to underwrite and get behind strategically. And so I think about it similarly for us, just in the reverse direction, which is we have a strategic relationship, which is great, with Facebook Watch. We have a great relationship with Netflix and with Amazon. We'll keep working with those partners, Apple, and, you know, increasingly as we're able to kind of gain more credibility and presence, we can make it more of our Religion of Sports content more at the forefront of that content. But at the same time, use our capital and use those relationships to expand out in audio and other vehicles, our direct relationship with the audience.
Interesting. Yeah. It's got to be tempting, though. I mean, just the dollars that, you know, Netflix is throwing at different programs for exclusive content, yeah, and the seeming bidding wars that seem to emerge between, you know, Apple TV and HBO and Netflix. Is it hard to stay disciplined and sort of keeping this quasi-independent mentality when, you know, I'm sure Netflix would love to just lock you guys up in some ridiculous deal?
First of all, I think the numbers are amazing, but, you know, they're few and far between where they throw those, the creators. But I think we, to your point, we do have the good fortune of getting deals done at these places. I think what's clear from us, though, is, you know, we sort of took a decision, and, you know, once you take capital, you know, you're making a bet, yeah, that we can build this as a brand and we can create more enterprise value in the long term by doing that than selling content as a production business in the near term. That was, you know, very strategic conversations we had in our boardroom with not only Tom Michael and our investors, but, you know, also Sherry Redstone, who's an investor who's, you know, in a lot of ways built this, right? With her father leading the way, you know, built Viacom with a series of sub brands that had, you know, MTV or Comedy Central and others. And, you know, she's the biggest believer in Religion of Sports and what we can build as a brand and the IP value that we can create. And you know, think that in today's world, the best way to do it is partnership with Netflix and Apple on some things and then go invest in our own and others. And that's, you know, the path until it changes.
The bet. That's the bet. Cool. What were you doing before this? What was your backstory?
So I was, so 20 years ago, I graduated from Texas in mechanical engineering, but never really spent a day doing engineering work. I started a software company in like the first dot-com boom and bust cycle, then went to grad school at Columbia for my MBA, met Gotham actually back then, just socially playing basketball through a mutual friend, went to BCG after business school for 8 years, and so worked as a consultant for different businesses. Media was one subset, but technology, kind of cutting across airlines or semiconductor companies globally between the US and India. And then worked for a few years at a family office where we'd actually invest in businesses.
Oh, cool.
I ran two of them, was an active board member in others. Usually the typical profile of the businesses we would take a majority stake in was between 5 and 50 million of revenue and try to grow and scale. Based on our family office lead, Mort Meyerson's interests. And so he was Ross Perot's right-hand guy for 40 years at EDS and Perot Systems, has a big IT services background. So that was my background. And Gotham, you know, has been a content creator his entire life. His father's Deepak Chopra. He's kind of grown up in this world of spirituality. And he would always say that, you know, everything his dad says in the world of spiritual traditions, he lives and breathes when it comes to content and sports in particular. And, you know, the analogies were endless. And so he started in the media space with Channel One, was actually a documentarian after that. And then made Sachin Tendulkar's, who's a cricketer's 30 for 30, and then Kobe's Muse. And we connected about 3 years ago as the first Religion of Sports show was getting set up at AT&T, and talked about how can this thing be broader than just a show? How can it be a media company? And that's the history.
That's amazing. His dad is Deepak Chopra, huh? I guess.
Yeah.
Last name. That's kind of amazing as well. So, yeah, okay. Yeah. Big question. How did you wrangle in Tom Brady and Michael Strahan? Yeah.
So Tom and Michael were close. Well, first of all, Gotham's relationship with them predated the business. He'd become personally friendly with both of them. And he approached them first to be executive producers on the show Religion of Sports. And they were enthused about that concept because of, you know, the show, as I described to you, wasn't about, you know, glorifying them personally or anything. It was leveraging their name to bring audience towards these stories that were kind of backdrops for how a sports changed lives. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Gotham and I then went to them after that and said, you know, yeah, we did this as a show, but, you know, why don't you become co-founders of this business? Because basically everything we will do will be that, which is every piece of content we create will be, whether it's with Tom Brady or with, you know, Steph Curry, the highest profile folks, you know, or, you know, again, these, you know, this woman who bikes across America for 40 straight hours. It'll be profiling that to say, what can you take away as people and how can, and they were excited, not just because of the commercial appetite and interest in doing so with us, but also because of their own, of course, personal stories and how sports has transformed their own lives and created a platform for them. And so I think that's where the excitement came from. And yeah, it's been amazing to work with them both. They both have, of course, busy lives. They're consumed with different things and day jobs, of course, that somehow you kind of look at them and say, how do you function for 25? How do you do all this in 24 hours a day?
And how do you stay looking like you're 32 or
both
younger,
of them,
right?
Yeah, it's true. It's amazing. They're both, and I think they actually do see that in each other. And in some ways it's been really interesting, which is they both see, I think, ways in which, you know, few others in the athletic realm, you know, Tom would see in Michael someone, I think you'd be hard pressed to find someone who's done more off the field than Michael has. And in Tom, you'd be hard pressed to say, you know, how has someone, you know, pushed himself to excellence in a way on the field that he has. Mm. And so I think they see that in each other as well.
Very interesting. What was that? Do you got a quick anecdote from like that first pitch meeting with them when you guys
were, well, they talk about this all the time. Michael always brings up the Super Bowl and how he broke Tom in his undefeated season in the Super Bowl and won. And so he will always bring that up and say, yeah, you can have all the Super Bowls you want, Tom, but I took you down in that one season where you were striving for perfection. So he will always bring that up. Tom will talk about how he claims, and I believe him because it's photographic memory, that he remembers a moment when he was throwing a pass and Michael was coming around. He caught him from the corner of his eye. And right when he let go, Michael actually let up and didn't take the hit. And he said he respected him for that because he didn't take a free shot.
That's fascinating. And now they're in business together and, you know,
yeah,
the races. That's pretty powerful. Okay, very cool. I could ask a million more questions, but let's get to the point of the show. How much have you guys raised and over how many rounds?
Yeah, so we announced we just raised a $10 million round Series A earlier this year. We had raised $3 million prior as a seed round, so it's 13 total. The first round was from co-led by Courtside and Advancet, which are both, you know, in this world of sports media investing. Courtside actually comes from Dan Gilbert's money, who's the owner of the Cavs, and a couple of the investors there have been in a bunch of different deals. Advancet comes from Sherry Redstone, but also from other investors. They both had co-invested in companies like The Athletic and others, and you know, all kind of knew each other, and we got really comfortable with them. And then leading this round was Elysian Park, who is comes from primarily the Dodgers ownership money, but also again other money, other investors, and they're in a lot of different sports media tech deals.
Interesting. Let's go chronologically. Let's go to that seed round. How did you identify, and maybe it's a Google search, but how did you identify sports focused investors? I haven't really seen that as a prominent category. Maybe it is.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, as someone who's spent some time investing myself and knows some of the world, and then Gotham, who's been around media for a long time before this, he also started a comics business as well. You know, we quickly figured out and knew that there's, you know, a niche sector here. It wouldn't make sense for us to go pitch Silicon Valley investors in the venture realm, because their profile, what they're looking for, is very different from what we were planning to build. Similarly, we were too early, and we still are too early to go look at, you know, growth equity. While we have revenue and growing revenue on the production side, it's more or less looks like services revenue than it does the revenue that growth equity investors would be looking for. And so early on, we knew that we'd have to narrow scope to primarily media venture investors, and that world is pretty narrow. And you know, once you get into it, you kind of, yeah, to your point, get to know everyone really fast. And and you know, through some of our connections, you know, advisors early to the business, through Michael, Tom, Gotham, myself, others, we got to know, you know, it's an interesting actually story that'll kind of come back to the Series A piece, but there's a guy, Jay Adia, who's an investor at Elysian Park now. He was my business school classmate, and he was also Gotham's college roommate. And he actually introduced us playing basketball 15 years ago, and became an early advisor to Religion of Sports, and, you know, made some good intros along with Gotham, you know, a few other people Gotham knew and I knew. I'll finish the story as you get to the Series A, but yeah, it was word of mouth, small circle, and then, you know, started a bunch of conversations and tried to figure out where there was a two-way fit that started to make a lot of sense.
Did you have Tom and Michael on at that point? Because I'm sure that would open a lot of.
They were on, yeah. They were on board already, and we had Tom versus Time had not come out yet, but we had done the deal for it, and so people knew that it was coming, and so we finished the fundraise, I think, right as Tom versus Time was coming out, which, you know, for us was our biggest hit and success, and actually propelled ourselves to growth on both the commercial side and then also with new content opportunities.
Did you have to bring in Tom to any final partners meetings or closing meetings?
We had them both actually, I think, at one of the early seed meetings, but it was basically as the deal was done, it was more thinking about, let's talk about this as a new collective board, more so than, you know, there to pitch investors.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it works. It helps on the recruiting front. It helps on the sales front, so forth. And it's not, you know, people who just want to, you know, although maybe that's part of it, but it's more of just, you know, validating that these are two people who really care about this business and they're not just on the masthead and aren't talking about, and aren't involved.
Yeah. 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 How many investors do you think you talked to for the seed and any funnel shape size?
That's a good question. Now the seed, to go back and think, we probably talked to maybe 10 or 20, that could be leads, you know, a few passed for, profile reasons, I'd say more than anything else, meaning is, you know, how fast we're going to quote unquote build a product was a lot of the conversation. And that wasn't part of our early thinking. Mm. And then, you know, some we didn't think were the right fit for a couple of reasons. And, you know, we felt like we got the best of both worlds by getting, courtside and advance it to co-lead, which was amazing. Both were, great and have proven to be huge, hugely value-added partners over the years, from a recruiting standpoint, from a business standpoint, and helpful in the boardroom as well.
So I think you said this, maybe I misheard, but you said Tom Against Time was coming out around the time. So you must have bootstrapped it to produce that initial, the initial couple segments. Did you?
Well, so the content we create ends up being profitable.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It's all a matter of how fast you want to hire others to do, you know, additional stuff on our own dime. And so we were profitable in 17, before it was started. And then we would reinvest those dollars into, you know, some of the early hires and team, in 18, as we started, it had just come out. And so, we then use that capital to start thinking about, okay, let's start some forays into digital, start some forays into audio. Let's start making, you know, experimental bets around the edges. And that's kind of what we did beyond the content creation from 18 through 20.
And this is just cause I know almost nothing about that industry, but
yeah, sure.
You sell a show and mm-hmm. they'll advance enough money to produce that show, or can you sell a concept and then, you know, kind of almost, the Dell computer model where you're selling it before having to produce it. Can you get your business model going that way? Or is it not?
Yeah, you can do, there's multiple ways to get the content moving. You can sell, and not surprisingly, there's restrictions come with how much capital risk you're willing to take. So you can take all the money from a network up front, to develop it, to build it, and then sell it. And then you'll have no rights to that content or IP. You'll get a fee once it's done, and then it'll be gone. You can invest more behind it. And then generally, these are not always the case, of course, but generally when you do that, you have a little bit more flexibility on, it's a license deal, so the rights come back to you over a period of time. Or you say, I want to invest in a bigger slug of it, and then I'll give you, the network, a window with which to produce and distribute it, and I'll keep the Globe or keep other opportunities, and then I own the IP and I'm able to go develop scripted things or products off of it and so forth. And so that's kind of how this stuff works. And so for us, we kind of are evolving from the first one, which is all we really were capitalized to do early, to more of the latter over time.
That makes sense. That's good. Good short version. There's your BCG days coming to the front. Here's the Venn diagram, the graph of, you know, amount invested up front and rights over time, right? Kind of.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, we try to keep it simple, but of course, as you know, there's a million complications. Oh, is the NFL involved? All things change when other partners come in and there's footage, for example, right? There's all versions of that, which adjust.
There's a good article, I think, I don't know if it was this last weekend, but a recent Wall Street Journal article about why you can't find a lot of movies on any streaming platform, and it's because of how the rights to things were structured. You know, some of these older movies, the rights never included online distribution, right? So there's just mm-hmm. like just the complexity of distribution rights, and you know, it sort of makes your head spin. I won't even get into that. But
yeah, no, I know. I know what you're saying. There is a lot of complexity. In fact, you know, that there's businesses built on for purely that purpose, which is what can you do in Ireland or Scotland or UK and Russia, and how do I divvy that up, and how do I think about time windows and so forth. Yeah, for sure.
All right, let's get back on track. Series A. So talk about putting this round together. So you guys raised that seed round, and then you put out another series of shows and decide, all right.
We put out a series of shows. What we really decided coming into this year is that we have really an opportunity now to double down on, as I mentioned, building a brand and building a content IP. And to do that, you can't really do that without you know, putting some investment in ahead of those shows. Audio is a big foray for us. We have a team now of 10 on the audio front. We think that podcasts are compelling. But for us, you know, conversational podcast, as you know, is you really need some expertise and a lot of development to have that stand out. And so what we're doing is starting with where we think we can make a difference, which is in the podcast world, which is doing storytelling in and around podcasts. So kind of merging the serial type podcast with the sports landscape. And so that's who we've done now, paired a bunch of sports storytellers like New York Times, Sports Illustrated, and so forth with producers, podcast producers. So we have producers from 30 for 30 or NPR and other places. And so that's what that team's working on. And actually tomorrow we'll announce, so it's new, it'll be hot off the presses tomorrow, that we're doing a deal with PRX, which is the podcast network and distribution house that does, you know, This American Life or The Moth or other podcasts. And so they're going to help us on marketing and audience development as well. And so that's a big area for us. But to get to that point, you know, we need to, of course, invest money and dollars behind this. And so Series A was around that. That was our thesis. And so it was interesting for us, which is we went out to the market. You know, we thought we were actually in a great spot. And we had a bunch of warm kind of people that we'd just been in touch with through the beginning. And so we went out in January. It was the beginning of our push. Mm-hmm. And you know, March started to hit. And there was a lot of, you know, as I'm sure you've heard from other founders, a lot of nervousness then. And so it became a really difficult time to have conversations because people wanted to push off and say, well, let's just kind of see what happens with COVID and how this turns out. Thankfully, you know, the guy I mentioned, Jay, who actually was you know, one of our close friends, had joined Elysian Park, which I would say was probably on the list of five firms that we would be looking at to lead this. Again, if you think of that intersection of where we're looking at, a larger capital round, but still being venture, you know, not that many places that would, you know, write a big check and be supportive of building something in this space and could add a lot of value in that way. You know, they've been in other deals that are in this world and have, you know, Nick Hill, who's joined our board now, is the ex head of Goldman Media in Asia and ex corporate development at Discovery. And so, you know, it's just that very deep media rights and kind of sports expertise. And so Jay, you know, was supportive and that's who we ended up going with to lead our round. I think we ended up probably talking to 10 or so firms about this. We did have another term sheet that was around that didn't make as much sense. But around Jay and the Elysian Park team, you know, Tucker and Cole and Nikhil and that group, we then were able to, they led with a chunk of the round. But around them, we had Courtside, Avancid, Tom Michael, others come back in. And then we were able to add a couple of great partners as well that were strategic. So that's kind of how it came together. But early it was a challenge, I would say, as March started.
Would you? Yeah, it feels like it's lighting up as we're recording this. This is early October.
I have to ask
what month this is. Yeah. It feels like it's kind of, you know, people are getting back to work and doing deals. But like, how did you overcome that just watch and wait mentality, which seemed to pervade? You know, you heard two things: either investors were just totally like going cold, or they're just focusing on their existing, you know, triage to their existing companies, and maybe a few were, the question really is, how did you keep pushing it forward? Was it just this relationship with the Elysian Park?
Yeah, it was a great relationship with them. And I think that's what a lot of it comes to, is also that we have a relationship prior to fundraising. I think that's the case with others too. It wasn't just Elysian Park. We had a few other, as I mentioned, another term sheet and others we were talking to. And I think a lot of it came from the credibility of getting to know each other before all of this. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a cold thing. So between 18 and 20, we were having a bunch of conversations. And it wasn't from a place, to be honest, of we were trying to set the seed for this. It was really, you know, there was a firm in LA I was talking to. It was really to get strategic advice and guidance, hiring support, thinking, and so forth. And so, you know, it came from a place of, you know, we know you guys are serious. You guys are really thinking about this long term. You guys have, you know, not only credibility from the content we see, but credibility personally. And so just, you know, it's a lot of lunches, dinners, conversations that over the years have happened. And I kind of think that's similar going forward too. It's, you know, keeping because those opportunities have come from those investors on the hiring front, for example, or on the partnership front that might not have been, even though they weren't involved, for example, in our A round. And I see that, you know, they're just in those circles. Again, small world, of people who kind of bounced around company to company and have been invested in different places. And so, yeah, it's, I think a lot of it was that. And so you weren't trying to cold pitch on Zoom for the first time with places that didn't know you. And so that, I think that went a long way for us.
So either what did you do to sort of foster that relationship credibility well in advance, or what advice do you give to others trying to do that, right? Some of that might've been organic because your co-founder was a college roommate. I mean, some of that, but what advice would you give around that?
Yeah, you know, one of Mort, my old boss at the 2M, would always talk about this concept of, you know, structured serendipity, which is like this idea of saying, you know, you can't have every conversation with everyone because you don't have the time. Yeah. But if you're always kind of actively looking for, you know, what could be versus just what the next deal is, you know, it enables you to have kind of these conversations that could lead some places that are more interesting. And so, you know, I think it's something that Gotham does well, something that I think I do well as well, which is how are you thinking about any conversation for the long term? And, you know, whether that's where WME represents and we work with a lot, you know, they're always putting people in front of us, or whether it's a conference you go to and or it's some panel we're presenting at and people will come and talk. You know, there's always something there. And so, yeah, I think that's a part of it. I think that, you know, just having the opportunity to meet certain investors and say, how can I add value to what you're doing right now? A lot of times mm-hmm. they'll want support in the diligence of a deal or mm-hmm. vetting a candidate or whatever it is. And so finding a way to be proactive and help them, I think, you know, you end up then getting a lot of back and forth, getting invited to certain things. You know, Advancit, for example, is our seed investor, does this thing at CES, if CES will happen again, but where they, you know, will do a dinner with people in our exact space. And so I've met so many people through that event that you stay in touch with on an ongoing basis. And again, I'm looking for kind of these longer term play things. There's, you know, media analysts that I've become really friendly with now and so forth, that I think it just comes from that world, just being really immersed in it and thinking about the long term.
Yeah, good. Total kind of random question, but did Gotham ever get any kind of fundraising or startup advice from his dad, Deepak Chopra? Is there any like little mantra lesson that he brings up occasionally? I think that would be interesting.
Yeah, you know, he talks about him a lot. I think less in the sense of raising capital, more in the sense though of I think the same concept, which is just like, you know, say yes and it creates opportunities. Try to be helpful. Try to, you know, give. His dad will do podcasts with, you know, random people. His dad will say yes to supporting and doing meditation with an athlete you may not have heard of, but it's all in the service of, you know, just service and doing uh-huh. things for others and with others. And I think Gotham in a lot of ways needs protection from himself sometimes that way, in the same way, which is like, he's only got 24 hours in a day. Yeah. He'll be similar that way.
Awesome. Well, very good. any just tips you would give your younger self if you were doing this all over again, or you worked in family offices, any tips for approaching family offices, any last words of advice we haven't covered, and if people want to learn more, give us your URL.
Yeah, so religionofsports.com is our URL, and you know, we have Religion of Sports on all the social channels too, so feel free to reach out. I would love for people to get engaged with the content and let us know opinions. In terms of earlier self, and then yeah, I'll take both of those on. The earlier self advice, I think the on the fundraise piece, I think the biggest part is just you know, I know it's easier said than done, particularly if you're out and you're like looking for capital. But you know, to your point, capital seems to be more available now than it has in the past. So, but really, be making these decisions knowing that this is a long-term play, business relationship to get into. It's, you know, I would argue a bigger decision than even some of your more strategic hires, because it's, you know, guidance that you're going to be taking from people over a long period of time, you know, people you're going to be presenting to, guidance you're going to get. I think it's a big relationship investment. And so try to vet it. And to the degree you can do as much of that outside of the quote unquote raising process as possible, again, in these kind of circumstantial conversations, you can kind of see what people are like in the real world and who they are. And so that would be my biggest piece of advice, is to make sure and just pound, you know, focus on that and try to hone that skill. On the family office front, I think it's, you know, the biggest advice I'd give there is just know that same thing. It's every family office is kind of a broad category. But if you don't know the world well, it's basically every family office is totally different. Everything is that category. And I think most of it comes from the patriarch, the founder. And so I think breaking in is a good objective, but I think knowing why you want to break in, what you want to do, and why you don't want to do it in private equity or in venture, if you want to be an investor, for example, and why you want to do it in a family office is really important. 90% of the time, the people that I've gotten to know in those worlds ended up finding their way into that world because of a relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's, they wanted to be a part of that family office more so than they wanted to be an investor or a operator in and around a family office. And so I would say, if there's something that really resonates with you personally, as it did with me, that's the way I found my way in, is I had met Mort speaking at a Columbia Business School class 15 years prior, was asking him for advice around a journey leaving BCG. And then we just really connected on a very personal level on some of the things he was working on for his foundation and otherwise. And I wanted to be a part of what he was building. And I think that's the right way to think about it versus canvassing and saying, I want to be part of this club, because that's usually the way that doesn't work there. Yeah.
Very interesting. All right. I will let you go, sir. Amit of Religion of Sports, this is awesome. Thank you for dropping knowledge. Can't wait to see what comes out next. I love the theme, the why sports matter, the spirit of it all. So it's awesome stuff. So I applaud you and thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Really appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks for the time. Thanks for doing what you do. Appreciate it.